immensely, and the two had developed a rather fine friendship, which was how he knew that Gareth would rather peel his eyelids back and leave them that way for an indefinite amount of time than sit through a long, drawn-out, all-day society affair. Whereas Hyacinth was, as she did not mind putting it, always interested in gossip, which meant that she surely would not wish to miss such an important wedding. Someone would drink too much, and someone else would dance too close, and Hyacinth would hate to be the last to hear of it. "Gregory?" his mother prompted. "I'm not going." "But I wasn't invited." "Oh, surely an oversight. One that will be corrected, I'm certain, after your efforts this evening." "Mother, as much as I would like to wish Lady Lucinda well, I have no desire to attend her or anyone's wedding. They are such sentimental affairs." Silence. Never a good sign. He looked at Hyacinth. She was regarding him with large, owlish eyes. "You like weddings," she said. He grunted. It seemed the best response. "You do," she said. "At my wedding, you..." "Hyacinth, you're my sister. It's different." "Yes, but you also attended Felicity Albansdale's wedding, and I distinctly recall..." Gregory turned his back on her before she could recount his merriness. "Mother," he said, "thank you for the invitation, but I do not wish to attend Lady Lucinda's wedding." Violet opened her mouth as if to ask a question, but then closed it. "Very well," she said. Gregory was instantly suspicious. It was not like his mother to capitulate so quickly. Further prying into her motives, however, would eliminate any chance of a quick escape. It was an easy decision. "I bid you both adieu," he said. "Where are you going?" Hyacinth demanded. "And why are you speaking French?" He turned to his mother. "She is all yours." "Yes," Violet sighed. "I know." Hyacinth immediately turned on her. "What does that mean?" "Oh, for heaven's sake, Hyacinth, you..." Gregory took advantage of the moment and slipped away while their attention was fixed on each other. The party was growing more crowded, and it occurred to him that Lucy might very well have arrived while he was speaking with his mother and sister. If so, she wouldn't have made it very far into the ballroom, however, and so he began to make his way toward the receiving line. It was a slow process. He'd been out of town for over a month, and everyone seemed to have something to say to him, none of it remotely of interest. "Best of luck with it," he murmured to Lord Trevelstan, who was trying to interest him in a horse he could not afford. "I'm sure you will have no difficulty..." His voice left him. He could not speak. He could not think. Good God, not again.
"Bridgerton?"
Across the room, just by the door, three gentlemen, an elderly lady, two matrons, and... her. It was her. And he was being pulled as sure as if there were a rope between them. He needed to reach her side.
"Bridgerton, is something..."
"I beg your pardon," Gregory managed to say, brushing past Trevelstan. It was her, except it was a different her. It wasn't Hermione Watson, it was... he wasn't sure who she was. He could see her only from the back, but there it was, that same splendid and terrible feeling. It made him dizzy. It made him ecstatic. His lungs were hollow. He was hollow. And he wanted her. It was just as he'd always imagined it, that magical, almost incandescent sense of knowing that his life was complete, that she was the one. Except that he'd done this before. And Hermione Watson hadn't been the one. Dear God, could a man fall insanely, stupidly in love twice? Hadn't he just told Lucy to be wary and scared, that if she was ever overcome with such a feeling, she should not trust it? And yet, there she was. And there he was. And it was happening all over again. It was just as it had been with Hermione. No, it was worse. His body tingled. He couldn't keep his toes still in his boots. He wanted to jump out of his skin, rush across the room, and just see her. He wanted her to turn. He wanted to see her face. He wanted to know who she was. He wanted to know her. No. No, he told himself, trying to force his feet in the other direction. This was madness. He should leave. He should leave right now. But he couldn't. Even with every rational corner of his soul screaming at him to turn around and walk away, he was rooted to the spot, waiting for her to turn, praying for her to turn. And then she did. And she was Lucy. He stumbled as if struck. Lucy? No, it couldn't be possible. He knew Lucy. She did not do this to him. He'd seen her dozens of times, kissed her even, and never once felt like this, as if the world might swallow him whole if he did not reach her side and take her hand in his. There had to be an explanation. He had felt this way before, with Hermione. But this time, it wasn't quite the same. With Hermione, it had been dizzying, new. There had been the thrill of discovery, of conquest, but this was Lucy. It was Lucy, and it all came flooding back. The tilt of the head as she explained why sandwiches ought to be properly sorted. The delightfully peeved look on her face when she had tried to explain to him why he was doing everything wrong in his courtship of Miss Watson. The way it had felt so right simply to sit on a bench with her in Hyde Park and throw bread at the pigeons. And the kiss. Dear God, the kiss. He still dreamed about that kiss, and he wanted her to dream about it too. He took a step, just one, slightly forward and to the side, so that he could better see her profile. It was all so familiar now, the tilt of her head, the way her lips moved when she spoke. How could he not have recognized her instantly, even from the back? The memories had been there, tucked away in the recesses of his mind, but he hadn't wanted, no, he hadn't allowed himself, to acknowledge his presence. And then she saw him. Lucy saw him. He saw it first in her eyes, which widened and sparkled, and then in the curve of her lips. She smiled. For him. It filled him. To near bursting it filled him. It was just one smile, but it was all he needed. He began to walk. He could barely feel his feet, had almost no conscious control over his body. He simply moved, knowing from deep within him that he had to reach her. Lucy, he said, once he was next to her, forgetting that they were surrounded by strangers and worse, friends, and he should not presume to use her given name. But nothing else felt right on his lips. Mr. Bridgerton, she said, but her eyes said, Gregory. And he knew. He loved her. It was the strangest, most wonderful sensation. It was exhilarating. It was as if the world had suddenly become open to him, clear. He understood. He understood everything he needed to know, and it was all right there in her eyes. Lady Lucinda, he said, bowing deeply over her hand. May I have this dance? Chapter 17, in which our hero's sister moves things along. It was heaven. Forget angels. Forget St. Peter and glittering harpsichords. Heaven was a dance in the arms of one's true love. And when the one in question had a mere week before marrying someone else entirely, aforementioned one had to grab heaven tightly with both hands, metaphorically speaking. Lucy grinned as she bobbed and twirled. Now there was an image. What would people say if she charged forward and grabbed him with both hands, and never let go? Most would say she was mad. A few that she was in love. The shrewd would say both. What are you thinking about? Gregory asked. He was looking at her differently. She turned away, turned back. She felt daring, almost magical. Wouldn't you care to know? He stepped around the lady to his left and returned to his place. I would, he answered, smiling wolfishly at her. But she just smiled and shook her head. Right now she wanted to pretend she was someone else, someone a little less conventional, someone a great deal more impulsive. She did not want to be the same old Lucy. Not tonight. She was sick of planning, sick of placating, sick of never doing anything without first thinking through every possibility and consequence. If I do this, then that will happen. But if I do that, then this, this, and the other thing will happen, which will yield an entirely different result, which could mean that it was enough to make a girl dizzy. It was enough to make her feel paralyzed, unable to take the reins of her own life. But not tonight. Tonight, somehow through some amazing miracle named the Duchess of Hastings, or perhaps the Dowager Lady Bridgerton, Lucy was not quite certain, she was wearing a gown of the most exquisite green silk, attending the most glittering ball she could ever have imagined. And she was dancing with the man she was quite certain she would love until the end of time. "You look different," he said.
"I feel different."
She touched his hand as they stepped past each other. His fingers gripped hers when they should have just brushed by. She looked up and saw that he was gazing at her. His eyes were warm and intense, and he was watching her the same way. Dear God, he was watching her the way he'd watched Hermione. Her body began to tingle. She felt it in the tips of her toes, in places she did not dare to contemplate. They stepped past each other again, but this time he leaned in, perhaps a bit more than he ought, and said, "I feel different as well." Her head snapped around, but he had already turned so that his back was to her. How was he different? Why? What did he mean? She circled around the gentleman to her left, then moved past Gregory. "Are you glad you attended this evening?" he murmured. She nodded, since she had moved too far away to answer without speaking too loudly. But then they were together again, and he whispered, "So am I." They moved back to their original places, and held still as a different couple began to process. Lucy looked up, at him, at his eyes. They never moved from her face. And even in the flickering light of the night, the hundreds of candles and torches that lit the glittering ballroom, she could see the gleam there, the way he was looking at her. It was hot, and possessive, and proud. It made her shiver. It made her doubt her ability to stand. And then the music was done, and Lucy realized that some things must truly be ingrained, because she was curtsying and smiling and nodding at the woman next to her, as if her entire life had not been altered in the course of the previous dance. Gregory took her hand and led her to the side of the ballroom, back to where the chaperones milled about, watching their charges over the rims of their glasses of lemonade. But before they reached their destination, he leaned down and whispered in her ear, "I need to speak with you." Her eyes flew to his. "Privately," he added. She felt him slow their pace, presumably to allow them more time to speak before she was returned to Aunt Harriet. "What is it?" she asked. "Is something amiss?" He shook his head. "Not any longer." And she let herself hope. Just a little, because she could not bear to ponder the heartbreak if she was wrong. But maybe, maybe, he loved her. Maybe he wished to marry her. Her wedding was less than a week away, but she had not said her vows. Maybe there was a chance. Maybe there was a way. She searched Gregory's face for clues, for answers. But when she pressed him for more information, he just shook his head and whispered, "The library. It is two doors down from the ladies' retiring room. Meet me there in 30 minutes. "Are you mad?" He smiled. "Just a little." "Gregory, I..." He gazed into her eyes, and it silenced her, the way he was looking at her. It took her breath away. "I cannot," she whispered, because no matter what they might feel for each other, she was still engaged to another man, and even if she were not, such behavior could only lead to scandal. "I can't be alone with you. You know that." "You must." She tried to shake her head, but she could not make herself move. "Lucy," he said, "you must." She nodded. It was probably the biggest mistake she would ever make, but she could not say no. "Mrs. Abernethy," Gregory said, his voice sounding overly loud as he greeted her Aunt Harriet. "I return Lady Lucinda to your care." Aunt Harriet nodded, even though Lucy suspected she had no idea what Gregory had said to her. And then she turned to Lucy and yelled,
I'm sitting down.
Gregory chuckled, then said, I must dance with others.
Of course,
Lucy replied, even though she rather suspected she was not wholly cognizant of the various intricacies involved in scheduling an illicit meeting.
I see someone I know, she lied,
and then to her great relief, she actually did see someone she knew, an acquaintance from school. Not a good friend, but still a familiar enough face to offer greetings. But before Lucy could even flex her foot, she heard a female voice call out Gregory's name. Lucy could not see who it was, but she could see Gregory. He had shut his eyes and looked quite pained.
Gregory!
The voice had drawn close, and so Lucy turned to her left to see a young woman who could only be one of Gregory's sisters. The younger one, most probably, else she was remarkably well-preserved.
This must be Lady Lucinda,
the woman said. Her hair, Lucy noted, was the precise shade of Gregory's, a rich, warm chestnut. But her eyes were blue, sharp and acute.
Lady Lucinda, Gregory said, sounding a bit like a man with a chore, may I present my sister, Lady St. Clair?
Hyacinth, she said firmly, we must dispense with the formalities. I am certain we shall be great friends. Now then, you must tell me all about yourself, and then I wish to hear about Anthony and Kate's party last month. I had wished to go, but we had a previous engagement. I heard it was vastly entertaining.
Startled by the human whirlwind in front of her, Lucy looked to Gregory for advice, but he just shrugged and said,
This would be the one I'm fond of torturing.
Hyacinth turned to him.
I beg your pardon?
Gregory bowed.
I must go.
And then Hyacinth Bridgerton St. Clair did the oddest thing. Her eyes narrowed, and she looked from her brother to Lucy and back again. And then again. And then one more time. And then she said,
You'll need my help.
Hi, Gregory began.
You will,
she cut in.
You have plans. Do not try to deny it.
Lucy could not believe that Hyacinth had deduced all that from one bow and I must go. She opened her mouth to ask a question, but all she got out was, How? Before Gregory cut her off with a warning look.
I know you have something up your sleeve,
Hyacinth said to Gregory, else you would not have gone to such lengths to secure her attendance this evening.
He was just being kind, Lucy tried to say.
Don't be silly, Hyacinth said, giving her a reassuring pat on the arm.
He would never do that.
That's not true, Lucy protested. Gregory might be a bit of a devil, but his heart was good and true, and she would not countenance anyone, even his sister, saying otherwise. Hyacinth regarded her with a delighted smile.
I like you, she said slowly, as if she were deciding upon it right then and there.
You are wrong, of course. But I like you anyway. She turned to her brother.
I like her.
Yes, you've said as much.
And you need my help.
Lucy watched as brother and sister exchanged a glance that she couldn't begin to understand.
You will need my help, Hyacinth said softly. Tonight and later, too.
Gregory stared at his sister intently. Then he said, in a voice so quiet that Lucy had to lean forward to hear it,
I need to speak with Lady Lucinda. Alone.
Hyacinth smiled, just a touch.
I can arrange that.
Lucy had a feeling she could do anything.
When?
Hyacinth asked.
Whenever is easiest, Gregory replied.
Hyacinth glanced around the room, although for the life of her Lucy could not imagine what sort of information she was gleaning that could possibly be pertinent to the decision at hand.
1 hour.
She announced, with all the precision of a military general.
Gregory, you go off and do whatever it is you do at these affairs. Dance, fetch lemonade, be seen with that Whitford girl whose parents have been dangling after you for months.
You, Hyacinth continued, turning to Lucy with an authoritarian gleam in her eye, shall remain with me. I shall introduce you to everyone you need to know.
Who do I need to know?
Lucy asked.
I'm not sure yet. It really doesn't matter.
Lucy could only stare at her in awe.
In precisely 55 minutes, Hyacinth said, Lady Lucinda will tear her dress.
I will?
I will, Hyacinth replied. I'm good at that sort of thing.
"You're going to tear her dress?" Gregory asked doubtfully. "Right here in the ballroom."
"Don't worry over details," Hyacinth said, waving him off dismissively. "Just go and do your part, and meet her in Daphne's dressing room in 1 hour."
"In the Duchess's bedchamber," Lucy croaked. "She couldn't possibly."
"She's Daphne to us," Hyacinth said. "Now then, everyone, off with you."
Lucy just stared at her and blinked. Or wasn't she meant to stay at Hyacinth's side?
"That means him," Hyacinth said.
And then Gregory did the most startling thing. He took Lucy's hand, right there in the middle of the ballroom, where anyone might see. He took her hand and kissed it.
"I leave you in good hands," he told her, stepping back with a polite nod. He gave his sister a look of warning before adding, "as difficult as that might be to believe."
Then he went off, presumably to dote on some poor unsuspecting female who had no idea she was nothing but an innocent pawn in his sister's master plan. Lucy looked back at Hyacinth, somewhat exhausted by the entire encounter. Hyacinth was beaming at her.
"Well done," she said, although to Lucy it sounded more like she was congratulating herself.
"Now then," she continued, "why does my brother need to speak with you? And don't say that you have no idea, because I will not believe you." Lucy pondered the wisdom of various replies, and finally decided upon, "I have no idea." It wasn't precisely the truth, but she wasn't about to divulge her most secret hopes and dreams to a woman she'd only met minutes earlier, no matter whose sister she might be. And it made her feel as if she might have won the point.
"Really?"
Hyacinth looked suspicious.
"Really?"
Hyacinth was clearly unconvinced.
"Well, you're clever at least. I shall grant you that."
Lucy decided she would not be cowed.
"Do you know," she said, "I thought I was the most organized and managing person I knew, but I think you're worse."
Hyacinth laughed.
"Oh, I am not at all organized, but I am managing, and we shall get on famously."
She looped her arm through Lucy's.
"Like sisters."
An hour later, Lucy had realized three things about Hyacinth, Lady St. Clair. First, she knew everyone, and everything about everyone. Second, she was a wealth of information about her brother. Lucy had not needed to ask a single question, but by the time they left the ballroom, she knew Gregory's favorite color, blue, and food, cheese of any sort, and that as a child, he had spoken with a lisp. Lucy had also learned that no one should ever make the mistake of underestimating Gregory's younger sister. Not only had Hyacinth torn Lucy's dress, she had carried it out with enough flair and cunning so that four people were aware of the mishap and the need for repair, and she had done all her damage to the hem so as to conveniently preserve Lucy's modesty. It was really quite impressive.
"I've done this before," Hyacinth confided as she guided her out of the ballroom.
Lucy was unsurprised.
"It's a useful talent," Hyacinth added, sounding utterly serious. "Here, this way."
Lucy followed her up a back staircase.
"There are very few excuses available to women who wish to leave a social function," Hyacinth continued, displaying a remarkable talent for sticking to her chosen topic like glue. "It behooves us to master every weapon in our arsenal."
Lucy was beginning to believe that she'd led a very sheltered life.
"Ah, here we are."
Hyacinth pushed open a door. She peered in.
"He's not here yet."
"Good. That gives me time."
"For what?"
"To mend your dress. I confess I forgot that detail when I formulated my plan, but I know where Daphne keeps needles." Lucy watched as Hyacinth strode to a dressing table and opened a drawer.
"Right where I thought they were," Hyacinth said with a triumphant smile. "I do love it when I'm right. It makes life so much more convenient, wouldn't you agree?"
Lucy nodded, but her mind was on her own question, and then she asked it.
"Why are you helping me?"
Hyacinth looked at her as if she were daft.
"You can't go back in with a torn dress, not after we told everyone we'd gone off to mend it."
No, not that."
"Oh."
Hyacinth held up a needle and regarded it thoughtfully.
"This will do. What color thread do you think?"
"White, and you did not answer my question." Hyacinth ripped a piece of thread off a spool and slid it through the eye of the needle.
"I like you," she said. And I love my brother.
You know that I am engaged to be married, Lucy said quietly.
I know.
Hyacinth knelt at Lucy's feet and with quick, sloppy stitches began to sew.
In a week. Less than a week.
I know. I was invited. Oh, Lucy supposed she ought to have known that.
Do you plan to attend?
Hyacinth looked up.
Do you?
Lucy's lips parted. Until that moment, the idea of not marrying Hazelby was a wispy, far-fetched thing, more of a, oh, how I wish I did not have to marry him sort of feeling. But now, with Hyacinth watching her so carefully, it began to feel a bit more firm. Still impossible, of course, or at least, well, maybe. Maybe not quite impossible. Maybe only mostly impossible.
The papers are signed, Lucy said.
Hyacinth turned back to her sewing.
Are they?
My uncle chose him, Lucy said, wondering just who she was trying to convince. It has been arranged for ages.
What the devil did that mean?
And he hasn't... Your brother hasn't... Lucy fought for words, mortified that she was unburdening herself to a mere stranger, to Gregory's own sister, for heaven's sake. But Hyacinth wasn't saying anything. She was just sitting there with her eyes focused on the needle looping in and out of Lucy's hem. And if Hyacinth didn't say anything, then Lucy had to, because
she did.
He has made me no promises, Lucy said, her voice nearly shaking with it.
He stated no intentions.
At that, Hyacinth did look up. She glanced around the room as if to say, look at us, mending your gown in the bedchamber of the Duchess of Hastings. And she murmured,
hasn't he?
Lucy closed her eyes in agony. She was not like Hyacinth St. Clair. One needed only a quarter of an hour in her company to know that she would dare anything, take any chance to secure her own happiness. She would defy convention, stand up to the harshest of critics, and emerge entirely intact in body and spirit. Lucy was not so hardy. She wasn't ruled by passions. Her muse had always been good sense. Pragmatism. Hadn't she been the one to tell Hermione that she needed to marry a man of whom her parents would approve? Hadn't she told Gregory that she didn't want a violent, overwhelming love? That she just wasn't the sort? She wasn't that kind of person. She wasn't. When her governess had made line drawings for her to fill, she had always coloured between the lines.
I don't think I can do it, Lucy whispered.
Hyacinth held her gaze for an agonizingly long moment before turning back to her sewing.
I misjudged you, she said softly.
It hit Lucy like a slap in the face.
What
did you say? But Lucy's lips would not form the words. She did not wish to hear the answer, and Hyacinth was back to her brisk self, looking up with an irritated expression as she said,
Don't fidget so much. Sorry.
Lucy mumbled, and she thought,
I said it again. I am so predictable, so utterly conventional and unimaginative.
You're still moving.
Oh, good God, she could do nothing right this evening.
Sorry. Hyacinth jabbed her with a needle.
You're still moving.
I'm not, Lucy almost yelled. Hyacinth smiled to herself.
That's better.
Lucy looked down and scowled.
Am I bleeding?
If you are, Hyacinth said, rising to her feet, it's nobody's fault but your own.
I beg your pardon?
But Hyacinth was already standing, a satisfied smile on her face.
There,
she announced, motioning to her handiwork. Certainly not as good as new, but it will pass any inspection this evening. Lucy knelt to inspect her hem. Hyacinth had been generous in her self-praise. The stitching was a mess.
I've never been gifted with a needle.
Hyacinth said with an unconcerned shrug. Lucy stood, fighting the impulse to rip the stitches out and fix them herself.
You might have told me, she muttered.
Hyacinth's lips curved into a slow, sly smile.
My, my, she said. You've turned prickly all of a sudden.
And then Lucy shocked herself by saying,
You've been hurtful.
Possibly, Hyacinth replied, sounding as if she didn't much care one way or the other. She glanced toward the door with a quizzical expression.
He ought to have been here by now.
Lucy's heart thumped strangely in her chest. "You still plan to help me?" she whispered. Hyacinth turned back.
"I am hoping," she replied, her eyes meeting Lucy's with cool assessment, "that you have misjudged yourself."
Gregory was 10 minutes late to the assignation. It couldn't be helped. Once he danced with one young lady, it had become apparent that he was required to repeat the favor for half a dozen others. And although it was difficult to keep his attention on the conversations he was meant to be conducting, he did not mind the delay. It meant that Lucy and Hyacinth were well gone before he slipped out the door. He intended to find some way to make Lucy his wife, but there was no need to go looking for scandal. He made his way to his sister's bedchamber. He had spent countless hours at Hastings House and knew his way around. When he reached his destination, he entered without knocking, the well-oiled hinges of the door giving way without a sound.
"Gregory?"
Hyacinth's voice came first. She was standing next to Lucy, who looked stricken. What had Hyacinth done to her?
"Lucy," he asked, rushing forward, "is something wrong?"
Lucy shook her head.
"It is of no account."
He turned to his sister with accusing eyes. Hyacinth shrugged.
"I will be in the next room."
"Listening at the door?"
"I shall wait at Daphne's escritoire," she said. "It is halfway across the room, and before you make an objection, I cannot go farther. If someone comes, you will need me to rush in to make everything respectable."
Her point was a valid one, loath as Gregory was to admit it. So he gave her a curt nod, and watched her leave the room, waiting for the click of the door latch before speaking.
"Did she say something unkind?" he asked Lucy.
"She can be disgracefully tactless, but her heart is usually in the right place."
Lucy shook her head.
"No,"
she said softly. "I think she might have said exactly the right thing."
"Lucy?"
He stared at her in question. Her eyes, which had seemed so cloudy, appeared to focus.
"What was it you needed to tell me?" she asked.
"Lucy," he said, wondering how best to approach this. He'd been rehearsing speeches in his mind the entire time he'd been dancing downstairs, but now that he was here, he didn't know what to say. Or rather, he did, but he didn't know the order, and he didn't know the tone. Did he tell her he loved her, bare his heart to a woman who intended to marry another? Or did he opt for the safer route and explain why she could not marry Hazelby? A month ago, the choice would have been obvious. He was a romantic, fond of grand gestures. He would have declared his love, certain of a happy reception. He would have taken her hand, dropped to his knees. He would have kissed her. But now, he was no longer quite so certain. He trusted Lucy, but he did not trust fate.
"You can't marry Hazelby," he said.
Her eyes widened.
"What do you mean?"
"You can't marry him," he replied, avoiding the question. "It will be a disaster. It will... You must trust me. You must not marry him." She shook her head.
"Why are you telling me this?"
"Because I want you for myself. Because... He fought for words. "Because you have become my friend, and I wish for your happiness. He will not be a good husband to you, Lucy."
"Why not?"
Her voice was low, hollow, and heartbreakingly unlike her.
Dear God, how did he say it? Would she even understand what he meant?
"He doesn't..." He swallowed. There had to be a gentle way to say it. "He doesn't... Some people..." He looked at her. Her lower lip was quivering.
"He prefers men,"
he said, getting the words out as quickly as he was able. "To women. Some men are like that." And then he waited. For the longest moment she made no reaction, just stood there like a tragic statue. Every now and then she would blink, but beyond that, nothing. And then finally,
"Why?"
"Why?" He didn't understand. "Why is he..."
"No," she said forcefully. "Why did you tell me? Why would you say it?"
"I told you..." "No, you didn't do it to be kind."
Why did you tell me? Was it just to be cruel? To make me feel the way you feel? Because Hermione married my brother and not you?
No! The word burst out of him, and he was holding her, his hands wrapped around her upper arms.
No, Lucy, he said again. I would never. I want you to be happy. I want...
her. He wanted her, and he didn't know how to say it. Not then. Not when she was looking at him as if he'd broken her heart.
I could have been happy with him, she whispered.
No. No, you couldn't.
You don't understand. Yes, I could, she cried out. Maybe I wouldn't have loved him, but I could have been happy. It was what I expected. Do you understand? It was what I was prepared for. And you...
She wrenched herself away, turning until he could no longer see her face.
You ruined it.
How? She raised her eyes to his, and the look in them was so stark, so deep, he could not breathe. And she said,
Because you made me want you instead.
His heart slammed in his chest.
Lucy,
he said, because he could not say anything else.
Lucy, I don't know what to do, she confessed.
Kiss me. He took her face in his hands. Just kiss me. This time, when he kissed her, it was different. She was the same woman in his arms, but he was not the same man. His need for her was deeper, more elemental. He loved her. He kissed her with everything he had, every breath, every last beat of his heart. His lips found her cheek, her brow, her ears, and all the while he whispered her name like a prayer. Lucy, Lucy, Lucy. He wanted her. He needed her. She was like air, food, water. His mouth moved to her neck and then down to the lacy edge of her bodice. Her skin burned hot beneath him, and as his fingers slid the gown from one of her shoulders, she gasped, but she did not stop him.
Gregory, she whispered, her fingers digging into his hair as his lips moved along her collarbone. Gregory, oh my God, Gregory.
His hand moved reverently over the curve of her shoulder. Her skin glowed pale and milky smooth in the candlelight, and he was struck by an intense sense of possession, of pride. No other man had seen her thus, and he prayed that no other man ever would. You can't marry him, Lucy, he whispered urgently, his words hot against her skin.
Gregory, don't, she moaned.
You can't. And then, because he knew he could not allow this to go any further, he straightened, pressing one last kiss against her lips before setting her back, forcing her to look him in the eye. You cannot marry him, he said again.
Gregory, what can I?
He gripped her arms hard, and he said it.
I love you.
Her lips parted. She could not speak.
I love you, he said again.
Lucy had suspected. She'd hoped, but she hadn't really allowed herself to believe. And so when she finally found words of her own, they were,
You do?
He smiled, and then he laughed, and then he rested his forehead on hers.
With all of my heart, he vowed. I only just realized it. I'm a fool. I'm a blind man. No,
she cut in, shaking her head.
Do not berate yourself. No one ever notices me straight away when Hermione is about.
His fingers gripped her all the tighter.
She does not hold a candle to you.
A warm feeling began to spread through her bones. Not desire, not passion, just pure, unadulterated happiness.
You really mean it, she whispered.
Enough to move heaven and earth to make sure you do not go through with your wedding to Hazelby. She blanched.
Lucy?
No. She could do it. She would do it.
It was almost funny, really. She had spent 3 years telling Hermione that she had to be practical, follow the rules. She'd scoffed when Hermione had gone on about love and passion and hearing music. And now...
She took a deep, fortifying breath. And now she was going to break her engagement that had been arranged for years to the son of an earl, 5 days before the wedding.
Dear God, the scandal!
She stepped back, lifting her chin so that she could see Gregory's face. His eyes were watching her with all the love she herself felt.
"I love you," she whispered,
because she had not yet said it.
"I love you, too."
For once, she was going to stop thinking about everyone else. She wasn't going to take what she was given and make the best of it. She was going to reach for her own happiness, make her own destiny. She was not going to do what was expected. She was going to do what she wanted. It was time. She squeezed Gregory's hands, and she smiled. It was no tentative thing, but wide and confident, full of her hopes, full of her dreams, and the knowledge that she would achieve them all. It would be difficult. It would be frightening. But it would be worth it.
"I will speak with my uncle," she said, the words firm and sure. "Tomorrow."
Gregory pulled her against him for one last kiss, quick and passionate with promise. "Shall I accompany you?" he asked. "Call upon him so that I might reassure him of my intentions." The new Lucy, the daring, the bold Lucy, asked, "And what are your intentions?" Gregory's eyes widened with surprise, then approval, and then his hands took hers. She felt what he was doing before she realized it by sight. His hands seemed to slide along hers as he descended, until he was on one knee, looking up at her as if there could be no more beautiful woman in all creation. Her hand flew to her mouth, and she realized she was shaking. "Lady Lucinda Abernathy," he said, his voice fervent and sure, "will you do me the very great honor of becoming my wife?" She tried to speak. She tried to nod. "Marry me, Lucy," he said. "Marry me." And this time, she did.
"Yes."
And then, "Yes, oh yes. I will make you happy," he said, standing to embrace her. "I promise you."
"There is no need to promise."
She shook her head, blinking back the tears. "There is no way you could not." He opened his mouth, presumably to say more, but he was cut off by a knock at the door, soft but quick. "Hyacinth."
"Go," Gregory said.
"Let Hyacinth take you back to the ballroom. I will follow later." Lucy nodded, tugging at her gown until everything was back in its proper place.
"My hair," she whispered, her eyes flying to his.
"It's lovely," he assured her. "You look perfect." She hurried to the door.
"Are you certain?"
"I love you," he mouthed, and his eyes said the same. Lucy pulled open the door, and Hyacinth rushed in.
"Good heavens, the two of you are slow," she said. "We need to be getting back, now."
She strode to the door to the corridor, then stopped, looking first at Lucy, then at her brother. Her gaze settled on Lucy, and she lifted one brow in question. Lucy held herself tall.
"You did not misjudge me," she said quietly.
Hyacinth's eyes widened, and then her lips curved.
"Good."
And it was, Lucy realized. It was very good indeed. Chapter 18, in which our heroine makes a terrible discovery. She could do this. She could. She needed only to knock. And yet there she stood, outside her uncle's study door, her fingers curled into a fist, as if ready to knock on the door, but not quite. How long had she stood like this? 5 minutes? 10? Either way, it was enough to brand her a ridiculous ninny. A coward. How did this happen? Why did it happen? At school she'd been known as capable and pragmatic. She was the girl who knew how to get things done. She was not shy. She was not fearful. But when it came to Uncle Robert, she sighed. She had always been like this with her uncle. He was so stern, so taciturn, so unlike her own laughing father had been. She'd felt like a butterfly when she left for school, but whenever she returned, it was as if she had been stuffed right back in her tight little cocoon. She became drab, quiet, lonely. But not this time. She took a breath, squared her shoulders. This time, she would say what she needed to say. She would make herself heard. She lifted her hand. She knocked. She waited.
Enter!
Uncle Robert, she said, letting herself into his study. It felt dark, even with the late afternoon sunlight slanting in through the window.
Lucinda,
he said, glancing briefly up before returning to his papers.
What is it?
I need to speak with you. He made a notation, scowled at his handiwork, then blotted his ink.
Speak.
Lucy cleared her throat. This would be a great deal easier if he would just look up at her. She hated speaking to the top of his head, hated it. Uncle Robert, she said again. He grunted a response, but kept on writing. Uncle Robert? She saw his movement slow, then finally he looked up.
What is it, Lucinda?
He asked, clearly annoyed. We need to have a conversation about Lord Hazelby.
There, she'd said it. Is there a problem?
He asked slowly. No, she heard herself say, even though that wasn't at all the truth. But it was what she always said if someone asked if there was a problem. It was one of those things that just came out, like, excuse me, or I beg your pardon. It was what she'd been trained to say. Is there a problem? No, of course not. No, don't mind my wishes. No, please, don't worry yourself on my account.
Lucinda?
Her uncle's voice was sharp, almost jarring. No, she said again, louder this time, as if the volume would give her courage. I mean, yes, there is a problem, and I need to speak with you about it. Her uncle gave her a bored look. Uncle Robert, she began, feeling as if she were tiptoeing through a field of hedgehogs. Did you know... She bit her lip, glancing everywhere but at his face. That is to say, were you aware...
Out with it!
He snapped. Lord Hazelby, Lucy said quickly, desperate just to get it over with. He doesn't like women. For a moment, Uncle Robert did nothing but stare. And then he laughed. He laughed. Uncle Robert? Lucy's heart began to beat far too quickly. Did you know this?
Of course I knew it, he snapped. Why do you think his father is so eager to have you? He knows you won't talk.
Why wouldn't she talk?
You should be thanking me,
Uncle Robert said harshly, cutting into her thoughts.
Half the men of the ton are brutes. I'm giving you the only one who won't bother you. But do you have any idea how many women would love to take your place?
That's not the point, Uncle Robert. His eyes turned to ice.
I beg your pardon.
Lucy stood perfectly still, suddenly realizing that this was it. This was her moment. She had never countermanded him before, and she probably never would again. She swallowed, and then she said it. I do not wish to marry Lord Hazelby. Silence. But his eyes were thunderous. Lucy met his stare with cool detachment. She could feel a strange new strength growing inside of her. She would not back down. Not now, not when the rest of her life was at stake. Her uncle's lips pursed and twisted, even as the rest of his face seemed to be made of stone. Finally, just when Lucy was certain that the silence would break her, he asked, his voice clipped,
May I ask why?
I want children, Lucy said, latching on to the first excuse she could think of.
Oh, you'll have them, he said.
He smiled, and then her blood turned to ice.
Uncle Robert, she whispered.
He may not like women, but he will be able to do the job often enough to sire a brat off you. And if he can't,
he shrugged. What? Lucy felt panic rising in her chest. What do you mean?
Davenport will take care of it.
His father? Lucy gasped.
Either way, it is a direct male heir, and that is all that is important.
Lucy's hand flew to her mouth. Oh, I can't, I can't. She thought of Lord Davenport with his horrible breath and jiggling jowls and his cruel, cruel eyes. He would not be kind. She didn't know how she knew, but he wouldn't be kind. Her uncle leaned forward in his seat, his eyes narrowing menacingly.
We all have our positions in life, Lucinda, and yours is to be a nobleman's wife. Your duty is to provide an heir, and you will do it in whatever fashion Davenport deems necessary.
Lucy swallowed. She had always done as she was told. She had always accepted that the world worked in certain ways. Dreams could be adjusted, the social order could not. Take what you are given and make the best of things. It was what she had always said. It was what she had always done. But not this time. She looked up directly into her uncle's eyes.
I won't do it, she said,
and her voice did not waver.
I won't marry him.
What did you say?
Each word came out like its own little sentence, pointy and cold. Lucy swallowed.
I said, I know what you said,
he roared, slamming his hands on his desk as he rose to his feet.
How dare you question me? I have raised you, fed you, given you every bloody thing you need. I have looked after and protected this family for 10 years, when none of it, will come to me.
Uncle Robert, she tried to say, but she could barely hear her own voice. Every word he had said was true. He did not own this house. He did not own the Abbey or any of the other Fensworth holdings. He had nothing other than what Richard might choose to give him once he fully assumed his position as Earl.
I am your guardian,
her uncle said, his voice so low it shook.
Do you understand? You will marry Hazelby, and we will never speak of this again.
Lucy stared at her uncle in horror. He had been her guardian for 10 years, and in all that time she had never seen him lose his temper. His displeasure was always served cold.
It's a Bridgerton idiot, isn't it?
He bit off, angrily swiping at some books on his desk. They tumbled to the floor with a loud thud. Lucy jumped back.
Tell me!
She said nothing, watching her uncle warily as he advanced upon her.
Tell me!
He roared. Yes, she said, quickly taking another step back. How did you know? How did you know?
Do you think I'm an idiot? His mother and his sister both begged the favour of your company on the same day.
He swore under his breath.
They were obviously plotting to steal you away.
But you let me go to the ball.
Because his sister is a duchess, you little fool. Even Davenport agreed that you had to attend. But Christ above!
Uncle Robert swore, shocking Lucy into silence.
I cannot believe your stupidity. Has he even promised marriage? Are you really prepared to toss over the heir to an earldom for the possibility of a Viscount's fourth son?
Yes,
Lucy whispered. Her uncle must have seen the determination on her face, because he paled.
What have you done?
He demanded.
Have you let him touch you?
Lucy thought of their kiss, and she blushed.
You stupid cow, he hissed. Well, lucky for you, Hazel, we won't know how to tell a virgin from a whore.
Uncle Robert!
Lucy shook with horror. She had not grown so bold that she could brazenly allow him to think her impure.
I would never, I didn't. How could you think it of me?
Because you're acting like a bloody idiot,
he snapped.
As of this minute, you will not leave this house until you leave for your wedding. If I have to post guards at your bedchamber door, I will.
No, Lucy cried out. How could you do this to me? What does it matter? We don't need their money. We don't need their connections. Why can't I marry for love?
At first our uncle did not react. He stood as if frozen, the only movement a vein pounding in his temple. And then, just when Lucy thought she might begin to breathe again, he cursed violently and lunged toward her, pinning her against the wall.
Uncle Robert!
She gasped. His hand was on her chin, forcing her head into an unnatural position. She tried to swallow, but it was almost impossible with her neck arched so tightly.
Don't!
She managed to get out, but it was barely a whimper.
Please, stop!
But his grip only tightened, and his forearm pressed against her collarbone, the bones of his wrist digging painfully into her skin.
You will marry Lord Hazelby, he hissed. You'll marry him, and I will tell you why.
Lucy said nothing, just stared at him with frantic eyes.
You, my dear Lucinda, are the final payment of a long-standing debt to Lord Davenport.
What do you mean? She whispered.
Blackmail,
Uncle Robert said in a grim voice.
We have been paying Davenport for years.
But why? Lucy asked. What could they possibly have done to warrant blackmail? Her uncle's lip curled mockingly.
Your father, the beloved 8th Earl of Fensworth, was a traitor.
Lucy gasped, and it felt as if her throat were tightening, tying itself into a knot. It couldn't be true. She thought perhaps an extramarital affair, maybe an earl who wasn't really an Abernathy, but treason? Dear God, no. Uncle Robert, she said, trying to reason with him, there must be a mistake, a misunderstanding. My father, he was not a traitor.
Oh, I assure you he was, and Davenport knows it.
Lucy thought of her father. She could still see him in her mind, tall, handsome, with laughing blue eyes. He had spent money far too freely. Even as a small child, she had known that. But he was not a traitor. He could not have been. He had a gentleman's honour. She remembered that. It was in the way he'd stood, the things he'd taught her. "You are lying," she said, the words burning in her throat. "Or misinformed."
"There's proof,"
her uncle said, abruptly releasing her, and striding across the room to his decanter of brandy. He poured a glass and took a long gulp.
"And Davenport has it."
"How?"
"I don't know how," he snapped. "I only know that it does. I have seen it."
Lucy swallowed and hugged her arms to her chest, still trying to absorb what he was telling her. "What sort of proof?"
"Letters," he said grimly, "written in your father's hand.
They could be forged."
"They have his seal," he thundered, slamming his glass down.
Lucy's eyes widened as she watched the brandy slosh over the side of the glass and off the edge of the desk.
"Do you think I would accept anything like this without verifying it myself?"
her uncle demanded.
"There was information, details, things only your father could have known. Do you think I would have paid Davenport's blackmail all these years if there was a chance it was false?"
Lucy shook her head. Her uncle was many things, but he was not a fool.
"He came to me 6 months after your father died. I have been paying him ever since."
"But why me?" she asked. Her uncle chuckled bitterly.
"Because you will be the perfect, upstanding, obedient bride. You will make up for Hazelby's deficiencies. Davenport had to get the boy married to someone, and he needed a family that would not talk."
He gave her a level stare.
"Which we will not. We cannot. And he knows it."
She shook her head in agreement. She would never speak of such things, whether she was Hazelby's wife or not. She liked Hazelby. She did not wish to make life difficult for him, but neither did she wish to be his wife.
"If you do not marry him," her uncle said slowly, "the entire Abernathy family will be ruined. Do you understand?"
Lucy stood frozen.
"We are not speaking of a childhood transgression, a gypsy in the family tree. Your father committed high treason. He sold state secrets to the French, passed them off to agents posing as smugglers on the coast."
"But why?" Lucy whispered. "We didn't need the money."
"How do you think we got the money?"
her uncle returned caustically.
"And your father,"
he swore under his breath,
"he always had a taste for danger. He probably did it for the thrill of it. Isn't that a joke upon us all? The very earldom is in danger, and all because your father wanted a spot of adventure."
"Father wasn't like that," Lucy said. But inside, she wasn't so sure. She'd been just 8 when he'd been killed by a footpad in London. She'd been told that he had come to the defense of a lady. But what if that, too, was a lie? Had he been killed because of his traitorous actions? He was her father, but how much did she truly know of him? But Uncle Robert didn't appear to have heard her comment.
"If you do not marry Hazelby," he said, his words low and precise, "Lord Davenport will reveal the truth about your father, and you will bring shame upon the entire house of Fensworth."
Lucy shook her head. Surely there was another way. This couldn't rest all upon her shoulders.
"You think not?"
Uncle Robert laughed scornfully.
"Who do you think will suffer, Lucinda? You? Well, yes, I suppose you will suffer, but we can always pack you off to some school and let you moulder away as an instructor. You'd probably enjoy it.
He took a few steps in her direction, his eyes never leaving her face.
Well, do think of your brother, he said. How will he fare as the son of a known traitor? The king will almost certainly strip him of his title, and most of his fortune as well.
No, Lucy said. No, she didn't want to believe it. Richard had done nothing wrong. Surely he couldn't be blamed for his father's sins. She sank into a chair, desperately trying to sort through her thoughts and emotions. Treason. How could her father have done such a thing? It went against everything she'd been brought up to believe in. Hadn't her father loved England? Hadn't he told her that the Abernathys had a sacred duty to all Britain? Or had that been Uncle Robert? Lucy shut her eyes tightly, trying to remember. Someone had said that to her. She was sure of it. She could remember where she'd stood, in front of the portrait of the First Earl. She remembered the smell of the air, and the exact words, and blast it all, she remembered everything save the person who had spoken them. She opened her eyes and looked at her uncle. It had probably been he. It sounded like something he would say. He did not choose to speak with her very often, but when he did, duty was always a popular topic. "Oh, father," she whispered. How could he have done this? To sell secrets to Napoleon? He jeopardized the lives of thousands of British soldiers. Or even... Her stomach churned. Dear God, he may have been responsible for their deaths. Who knew what he had revealed to the enemy? How many lives had been lost because of his actions?
It's up to you, Lucinda, her uncle said. It is the only way to end it.
She shook her head, uncomprehending. What do you mean?
Once you are at Devonport, there can be no more blackmail. Any shame they bring upon us would fall on their shoulders as well.
He walked to the window, leaning heavily on the sill as he looked out.
After 10 years, we will finally be free.
Lucy said nothing. There was nothing to say. Uncle Robert peered at her over his shoulder, then turned and walked towards her, watching her closely the entire way.
I see you finally grasp the gravity of the situation, he said.
She looked at him with haunted eyes. There was no compassion in his face, no sympathy or affection, just a cold mask of duty. He had done what was expected of him, and she would have to do the same. She thought of Gregory, of his face when he had asked her to marry him. He loved her. She did not know what manner of miracle had brought it about, but he loved her. And she loved him. God above, it was almost funny. She, who had always mocked romantic love, had fallen. Complete and hopelessly, she'd fallen in love. Enough to throw aside everything she'd thought she believed in. For Gregory, she was willing to step into scandal and chaos. For Gregory, she would brave the gossip and the whispers and the innuendo. She, who went mad when her shoes were out of order in her wardrobe, was prepared to jilt the son of an earl 4 days before the wedding. If that wasn't love, she did not know what was. Except now, it was over. Her hopes, her dreams, the risks she longed to take, they were all over. She had no choice. If she defied Lord Davenport, her family would be ruined. She thought of Richard and Hermione, so happy, so in love. How could she consign them to a life of shame and poverty? If she married Hazelby, her life would not be what she wanted for herself, but she would not suffer. Hazelby was reasonable. He was kind. If she appealed to him, surely he would protect her from his father. Her life would be comfortable. Routine. Far better than Richard and Hermione would fare if her father's shame was made public. Her sacrifice was nothing compared to what her family would be forced to endure if she refused. Hadn't she once wanted nothing more than comfort and routine? Couldn't she learn to want this again? I will marry him, she said, sightlessly gazing at the window. It was raining. When had it begun to rain?
Good.
Lucy sat in her chair, utterly still. She could feel the energy draining from her body, sliding through her limbs, seeping out her fingers and toes. Lord, she was tired. weary, and she kept thinking that she wanted to cry. But she had no tears. Even after she'd risen and walked slowly back to her room, she had no tears. Next day, when the butler asked her if she was at home for Mr. Bridgerton, and she shook her head, she had no tears. And the day after that, when she was forced to repeat the same gesture, she had no tears. But the day after that, after spending 20 hours holding his calling card, gently sliding her finger over his name, tracing each letter, the Honourable Gregory Bridgerton, she began to feel them pricking behind her eyes. Then she caught sight of him, standing on the pavement, looking up at the façade of Fensworth House. And he saw her. She knew he did. His eyes widened and his body tensed, and she could feel it, every ounce of his bewilderment and anger. She let the curtain drop, quickly. And she stood there, trembling, shaking, and yet still unable to move. Her feet were frozen to the floor, and she began to feel it again, that awful rushing panic in her belly. It was wrong. It was all so wrong, and yet she knew she was doing what had to be done. She stood there, at the window, staring at the ripples in the curtain. She stood there as her limbs grew tense and tight, and she stood there as she forced herself to breathe. She stood there as her heart began to squeeze harder and harder, and she stood there as it all slowly began to subside. Then, somehow, she made her way to the bed and lay down. And then, finally, she found her tears. Chapter 19, in which our hero takes matters, and our heroine, into his own hands. By Friday, Gregory was desperate. Thrice he called upon Lucy at Fensworth House. Thrice he'd been turned away. He was running out of time. They were running out of time. What the hell was going on? Even if Lucy's uncle had denied her request to stop the wedding, and he could not have been pleased, she was, after all, attempting to jilt a future earl. Surely Lucy would have attempted to contact him. She loved him. He knew it the way he knew his own voice, his own heart. He knew it the way he knew the earth was round and her eyes were blue and that 2 + 2 would always be 4. Lucy loved him. She did not lie. She could not lie. She would not lie. Not about something like this, which meant that something was wrong. There could be no other explanation. He had looked for her in the park, waiting for hours at the bench where she liked to feed pigeons, but she had not appeared. He had watched her door, hoping he might intercept her on her way to carry out errands, but she had not ventured outside. And then, after the third time he had been refused entry, he saw her, just a glimpse through the window. She had let the curtains fall quickly, but it had been enough. He had not been able to see her face, not well enough to gauge her expression, but there had been something in the way she moved, in the hurried, almost frantic release of the curtains. Something was wrong. Was she being held against her will? Had she been drugged? Gregory's mind raced with the possibilities, each more dire than the last. And now it was Friday night. Her wedding was in less than 12 hours, and there was not a whisper, not a peep of gossip. If there were even a hint that the Hazelby-Abernathy wedding might not take place as planned, Gregory would have heard about it. If nothing else, Hyacinth would have said something. Hyacinth knew everything, usually before the subject of the rumours themselves. Gregory stood in the shadows across the street from Fensworth House and leaned against the trunk of a tree, staring. Just staring. Was that her window, the one through which he'd seen her earlier that day? There was no candlelight peeking through, but the draperies were probably heavy and thick. Or perhaps she'd gone to bed. It was late. And she had a wedding in the morning. Good God! He could not let her marry Lord Hazelby. He could not. If there was one thing he knew in his heart, it was that he and Lucinda Abernathy were meant to be husband and wife. Hers was the face he was supposed to gaze upon over eggs and bacon and kippers and cod and toast every morning. A snort of laughter pressed through his nose. It was that nervous, desperate kind of laughter, the sound one made when the only alternative was to cry. Lucy had to marry him. if only so that they could eat masses and masses of food together every morning. He looked at her window. What he hoped was her window. With his luck, he was mooning over the servants' washroom. How long he stood there, he did not know. For the first time in his memory, he felt powerless, and at least this, watching a bloody window, was something he could control. He thought about his life. Charmed, for sure. Plenty of money, lovely family, scads of friends. He had his health, he had his sanity, and until the fiasco with Hermione Watson, an unshakable belief in his own sense of judgment. He might not be the most disciplined of men, and perhaps he should have paid more attention to all those things Anthony liked to pester him about. But he knew what was right, and he knew what was wrong, and he'd known, he had absolutely known, that his life would play out on a happy and contented canvas. He was simply that sort of person. He wasn't melancholy, he wasn't given to fits of temper, and he'd never had to work very hard. He looked up at the window thoughtfully. He'd grown complacent, so sure of his own happy ending that he hadn't believed, he still couldn't quite believe, that he might not get what he wanted. He had proposed, she had accepted. True, she had been promised to Hazelby, and still was, for that matter. But wasn't true love supposed to triumph? Hadn't it done so for all his brothers and sisters? Why the hell was he so unlucky? He thought about his mother, remembered the look on her face when she had so skillfully dissected his character. She had got almost everything right, he realized. But only most. It was true that he had never had to work very hard at anything, but that was only part of the story. He was not indolent. He would work his fingers to the very bone if only he had a reason. He stared at the window. He had a reason now. He'd been waiting, he realized. Waiting for Lucy to convince her uncle to release her from her engagement. Waiting for the puzzle pieces that made up his life to fall into position so that he could fit the last one in its place with a triumphant aha. Waiting. Waiting for love, waiting for a calling. Waiting for clarity, for that moment when he would know exactly how to proceed. It was time to stop waiting. Time to forget about fate and destiny. It was time to act, to work, hard. No one was going to hand him that second-to-last piece of the puzzle. He had to find it for himself. He needed to see Lucy. And it had to be now, since it appeared he was forbidden to call upon her in a more conventional manner. He crossed the street, then slipped around the corner to the back of the house. The ground-floor windows were tightly shut, and all was dark. Higher on the façade, a few curtains fluttered in the breeze, but there was no way Gregory could scale the building without killing himself. He took stock of his surroundings. To the left, the street. To the right, the alley and the mews. And in front of him, the servants' entrance. He regarded it thoughtfully. Well, why not? He stepped forward and placed his hand on the knob. It turned. Gregory almost laughed with delight. At the very least, he went back to believing, well, perhaps just a little, about fate and destiny and all that rot. Surely this was not a usual occurrence. A servant must have sneaked out, perhaps to make his own assignation. If the door was unlocked, then clearly Gregory was meant to go inside. Or was he mad in his head? He decided to believe in fate. Gregory shut the door quietly behind him, then gave his eyes a minute or so to become accustomed to the dark. He appeared to be in a large pantry, with the kitchen off to the right. There was a decent chance that some of the lower servants slept nearby, so he removed his boots, carrying them in one hand, as he ventured deeper into the house. His stockinged feet were silent as he crept up the back stairs, making his way to the second floor, the one he thought housed Lucy's bedchamber. He paused on the landing, stopping for a brief moment of sanity before stepping out into the hall. What was he thinking? He hadn't the slightest clue what might happen if he were caught here. Was he breaking a law? Probably. He couldn't imagine how he might not be. And while his position as brother to a Viscount would keep him from the gallows, it would not wipe his slate clean when the home he'd chosen to invade belonged to an earl. But he had to see Lucy. He was done with waiting. He took a moment on the landing to orient himself, then walked toward the front of the house. There were two doors at the end. He paused, painting a picture of the house's facade in his mind. Then reach for the one on the left. If Lucy had indeed been in her own room when he'd seen her, this was the correct door. If not, well then, he hadn't a clue. Not a clue. And here he was, prowling in the Earl of Fensworth's house after midnight. Good God! He turned the knob slowly, letting out a relieved breath when it made no clicks or squeaks. He opened the door just far enough to fit his body through the opening, then carefully shut it behind him, only then taking the time to examine the room. It was dark, with scarcely any moonlight filtering in around the window coverings. His eyes had already adjusted to the dimness, however, and he could make out various pieces of furniture. A dressing table. A wardrobe. A bed. It was a heavy, substantial thing with a canopy and full drapes that closed around it. If there was indeed someone inside, she slept quietly. No snoring, no rustling. Nothing. Well, that's how Lucy would sleep, he suddenly thought. Like the dead. She was no delicate flower, his Lucy, and she would not tolerate anything less than a perfectly restful night. It seemed odd that he would be so certain of this, but he was. He knew her, he realized. He truly knew her. Not just the usual things. In fact, he didn't know the usual things. He did not know her favorite color, nor could he guess her favorite animal or food. But somehow it didn't matter if he didn't know that she preferred pink or blue or purple or black. He knew her heart. He wanted her heart, and he could not allow her to marry someone else. Carefully, he drew back the curtains. There was no one there. Gregory swore under his breath, until he realized that the sheets were mussed, the pillow with a fresh indent of someone's head. He whirled around just in time to see a candlestick swinging wildly through the air at him. Letting out a surprised grunt, he ducked, but not fast enough to avoid a glancing blow to his temple. He swore again, this time in full voice, and then he heard, "Gregory?" He blinked. "Lucy?" She rushed forward. "What are you doing here?" He motioned impatiently toward the bed. "Why aren't you asleep?" "Because I'm getting married tomorrow." "Well, that's why I'm here." She stared at him dumbly, as if his presence was so unexpected that she could not muster the correct reaction. "I thought you were an intruder," she finally said, motioning to the candlestick. He allowed himself the tiniest of smiles. "Not to put too fine a point on it," he murmured, "but I am." For a moment it looked as if she might return the smile, but instead she hugged her arms to her chest and said, "You must go, right now. Not until you speak with me." Her eyes slid to a point over his shoulder. "There is nothing to say." "What about I love you?" "Don't say that," she whispered. He stepped forward. "I love you." "Gregory, please." Even closer. "I love you." She took a breath, squared her shoulders. "I am marrying Lord Hazelby tomorrow." "No," he said. "You're not." Her lips parted. He reached out and captured her hand in his. She did not pull away. "Lucy," he whispered. She closed her eyes. "Be with me," he said. Slowly she shook her head. "Please, don't." He tugged her closer and pulled the candlestick from her slackening fingers. "Be with me, Lucy Abernathy. Be my love. Be my wife." She opened her eyes, but she held his gaze for only a moment before twisting away. "You're making it so much worse," she whispered. The pain in her voice was unbearable. "Lucy," he said, touching her cheek, "let me help you." She shook her head, but she paused as her cheek settled into his palm. Not for long, barely a second, but he felt it. "You can't marry him," he said, tilting her face toward his. "You won't be happy." Her eyes glistened as they met his. In the dim light of the night, they looked a dark, dark grey, and achingly sad. He could imagine the entire world there, in the depths of her gaze. Everything he needed to know, everything he might ever need to know. It was there, within her. "You won't be happy, Lucy," he whispered.
You know that you won't.
Still, she didn't speak. The only sound was her breath moving quietly across her lips. And then, finally,
I will be content.
Content? He echoed. His hand dropped from her face, falling to his side as he stepped back.
You will be content?
She nodded.
And that's enough?
She nodded again, but smaller this time. Anger began to spark within him. She was willing to toss him away for that. Why wasn't she willing to fight? She loved him, but did she love him enough?
Is it his position? He demanded. Does it mean so much to you to be a countess?
She waited too long before replying, and he knew she was lying when she said,
Yes. I don't believe you, he said,
and his voice sounded terrible, wounded, angry. He looked at his hand, blinking with surprise as he realized he was still holding the candlestick.
He wanted to hurl it at the wall.
Instead, he set it down. His hands were not quite steady, he saw. He looked at her. She said nothing.
Lucy, he begged, just tell me. Let me help you.
She swallowed, and he realized she was no longer looking at his face. He took her hands in his. She tensed, but she did not pull away. Their bodies were facing each other, and he could see the ragged rise and fall of her chest. It matched what he felt in his own.
I love you, he said.
Because if he kept saying it, maybe it would be enough. Maybe the words would fill the room, surround her, and sneak beneath her skin. Maybe she would finally realize that there were certain things that could not be denied.
We belong together, he said, for eternity.
Her eyes closed. One single heavy blink. But when she opened them again, she looked shattered.
Lucy, he said,
trying to put his very soul into one single word.
Lucy, tell me, please.
Don't say that, she said, turning her head so that she was not quite looking at him. Her voice caught and shook.
Say anything else, but not that.
Why not? And then she whispered.
Because it's true.
His breath caught. And in one swift movement he pulled her to him. It was not an embrace, not quite. Their fingers were entwined, their arms bent, so that their hands met between their shoulders. He whispered her name. Lucy's lips parted. He whispered it again, so soft that the words were more of a motion than a sound.
Lucy, Lucy.
She held still, barely breathing. His body was so close to hers, yet not quite touching. There was heat, though, filling the space between them, swirling through her nightgown, trembling along her skin.
She tingled. Let me kiss you, he whispered. One more time. Let me kiss you one more time, and if you tell me to go, I swear that I will.
Lucy could feel herself slipping, sliding into need, falling into a hazy place of love and desire where right was not quite so identifiable from wrong.
She loved him. She loved him so much.
And he could not be hers. Her heart was racing. Her breath was shaking. And all she could think was that she would never feel this way again. No one would ever look at her the way Gregory was right at that very moment. In less than a day, she was to marry a man who wouldn't even wish to kiss her. She would never feel this strange curling in the core of her womanhood, the fluttering in her belly. This was the last time she'd stare at someone's lips and ache for them to touch her.
Dear God, she wanted him. She wanted this, before it was too late. And he loved her. He loved her. He'd said it, and even though she couldn't quite believe it, she believed him.
She licked her lips.
Lucy, he whispered,
her name a question, a statement, and a plea, all in one.
She nodded.
And then, because she knew she could not lie to herself or to him, she said the words.
Kiss me.
There would be no pretending later. No claiming she had been swept away by passion, stripped of her ability to think. The decision was hers, and she'd made it. For a moment Gregory did not move, but she knew that he heard her. His breath sucked raggedly into him, and his eyes turned positively liquid as he gazed at her.
"Lucy," he said, his voice husky and deep and rough, and 100 other things that turned her bones to milk.
His lips found the hollow where her jaw met her neck.
"Lucy," he murmured.
She wanted to say something in return, but she could not. It had taken all she had just to ask for his kiss.
"I love you,"
he whispered, trailing the words along her neck to her collarbone.
"I love you, I love you."
They were the most painful, wonderful, horrible, magnificent words he could have said. She wanted to cry with happiness and sorrow, pleasure and pain. And she understood, for the first time in her life, she understood the prickly joy of complete selfishness. She shouldn't be doing this. She knew she shouldn't, and she knew he probably thought that this meant that she would find a way out of her commitment to Hazelby. She was lying to him, as surely as if she'd said the words, but she could not help herself. This was her moment, her one moment to hold bliss in her hands, and it would have to last a lifetime. Emboldened by the fire within her, she pressed her hands roughly to his cheeks, pulling his mouth against hers for a torrid kiss. She had no idea what she was doing. She was sure there must be rules to all this, but she didn't care. She just wanted to kiss him. She couldn't stop herself. One of his hands moved to her hips, burning through the thin fabric of her nightgown. Then it stole around to her bottom, squeezing and cupping, and there was no more space between them. She felt herself sliding down, and then they were on the bed, and she was on her back, his body pressed against hers, the heat and the weight of it exquisitely male. She felt like a woman. She felt like a goddess. She felt that she could wrap herself around him and never let go. "Gregory," she whispered, finding her voice as she twined her fingers in his hair. He stilled, and she knew he was waiting for her to say more. "I love you," she said, because it was true, and because she needed something to be true. Tomorrow he would hate her. Tomorrow she would betray him. But in this, at least, she would not lie. "I want you," she said, and he lifted his head to gaze into her eyes. He stared at her long and hard, and she knew that he was giving her one last chance to back out. "I want you," she said again, because she wanted him beyond words. She wanted him to kiss her, to take her, and to forget that she was not whispering words of love. "Luce," she placed a finger to his mouth, and she whispered, "I want to be yours." And then she added, "Tonight." His body shuddered, his breath moving audibly over his lips. He groaned something, maybe her name, and then his mouth met hers in a kiss that gave and took and burned and consumed until Lucy could not help but move underneath him. Her hand slid to his neck, then inside his coat, her fingers desperately seeking heat and skin. With a roughly mumbled curse, he rose up, still straddling her, and yanked off the coat and cravat. She stared at him with wide eyes. He was removing his shirt, not slowly or with finesse, but with frantic speed that underscored his desire. He was not in control. She might not be in control, but neither was he. He was as much a slave to this fire as she was. He tossed his shirt aside, and she gasped at the sight of him, the light sprinkling of hair across his chest, the muscles that sculpted and stretched under his skin. He was beautiful. She hadn't realized a man could be beautiful, but it was the only word that could possibly describe him. She lifted one hand and gingerly placed it against his skin. His blood leaped and pulsed beneath, and she nearly pulled away. "No," he said, covering her hand with his own. He wrapped his fingers around hers, and then took her to his heart. He looked into her eyes. She could not look away. And then he was back, his body hard and hot against hers, his hands everywhere and his lips everywhere else. And her nightgown, it no longer seemed to be covering quite so much of her. It was up against her thighs, then pulled around her waist. He was touching her, not there, but close, skimming along her belly, scorching her skin. "Gregory," she gasped, because somehow his fingers had found her breast. "Oh, Lucy," he groaned, cupping her, squeezing, tickling the tip, and, oh, dear God, how was it possible that she'd felt it there? Her hips arched and bucked, and she needed to be closer. She needed something she couldn't quite identify, something that would fill her, complete her. He was tugging at her nightgown now, and it slipped over her head, leaving her scandalously bare.